You've been through pre-Cana. Maybe you've even said I do. And now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. Today, we are jumping back into our conversation with Rich and Anne Meyer. When we last left off, we were in the middle of some advice on dating and how to discern if someone is right for you. So go check out part one if you're curious about that. The question we're jumping back into piggybacks off of the concept of personal development and what it means in terms of coming into a relationship at a young age, maybe in college or soon after college. That is when Rich and Anne met each other. They will share what's necessary to have as a foundation for getting married, while also reminding us that you don't and can't really have it all figured out when you marry young. From there, we'll get a look into their married life and family with 8 children, and I am just so moved by the wisdom and resources they so generously shared with us. So let's dive back in.
Right, and you want to be fully you.
Speaking of being fully you, this is a great segue into my next question. So both of you met in college. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who are very eager to get married to their either in college or, you know, they're out of college and they're very eager to start the rest of their lives. And sometimes young people can forget that sort of concept of like, well, am I a fully developed person coming into a relationship? Or and what is your advice to those couples having, you know, met each other in like an academic institution where you're learning so much about who you are? Are there any things that you learned in college that about yourself that you ended up bringing into your marriage later, and that character development that was so integral and that growth in your faith as well?
I think the thing for me, and I would say, I don't want to answer for you.
Okay.
But for Rich as well, is really the growth in faith that we experienced in college before we met and got married. I mean, I'm just super grateful for that. Because had we not had that experience, I think it would have been difficult to begin a marriage with the right priorities in mind.
Right.
So I mean, I think we were young, and we certainly still had a lot of individual personal growth that needed to happen even after we got married. But we had enough in place to understand what was fundamental for entering a sacrament and entering a lifelong commitment. So I would say that for me was the most important aspect of personal growth that needed to be there before we were ready to get married.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're always in a constant stage of growth and virtue. And if we, you know, regardless of whether you're 20 or you're 40 or 60, and if you happen to be dating somebody at those ages, to somehow have this notion of I may not be ready to fully commit to a relationship because I still have virtue that I need to work on. I mean, there can be truth to that. Don't get me wrong. So, and maybe a partner relationship would actually call that out and say, hey, I'd love to marry you, but there are some areas of your life that you got to get together. Like, you're not ready to be my husband or I'm not ready to be your wife because of X, whatever X may be. So that, I mean, I think there's certainly truth to that. But maybe going back to what Anne said, I think, especially if you're on the younger side, maybe out of college, and what you'd said about some of your friends who were eager to get married, I think if you have some of these important dimensions in place about what do we want from our marriage and our family in terms of faith, in terms of being open to life, and what does our family look like in terms of the children that God may ask us to bring into this role, and what's our attitude toward that, towards our disposition toward that, you know, what is our attitude toward us and our family and working, right, and in our relative careers, professions, and how are we going to make those things meld together, and who wants what from a profession and family life. Getting on the same page in those maybe 3 areas that I just mentioned, are really important. I would say more important than, oh gosh, I'm not as patient as I can be, and I know, you know, I can be more patient, so let me work on this for another 6 months, and maybe when I'm the epitome of patience, now I'm ready to get married.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And you weren't saying that, Emily, but I do think that it maybe it's a bit of a little bit of a red herring. If there's I have to develop more as a person before I'm ready to marry somebody. I think, to me, if I were in a relationship and I heard somebody say that, I would say, well, do you want to be with me or do you not want to be with me?
This sounds a little bit like a cop-out.
It sounds like in my generation, people would have said, hey, I got to go find myself for a year. Uh-huh. You know, and my parents would have said, find yourself. What do you mean? You're right here. Here's a mirror. You're right. You want me to find you? Right, you're right here. Right.
There's definitely something else.
So I think,
to be honest, the most growth in personal virtue happens when you're in the situation. I mean, when you're in a marriage and you have to work out a conflict, mm-hmm. a lot of personal growth ensues. When you have children, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the moment when the most personal growth ensues, because mm-hmm. suddenly you have these little people that are depending on you, and you have to be more selfless, mm-hmm. more considerate, more, you know, it's just, it, yeah, I call yeah. parenting baby or having babies virtue boot camp, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's really hard yeah. work.
I mean, I'm thinking about the kinds of people that could even be tuning in and listening to this podcast too. I mean, it is feasible though that you could be in a relationship with somebody and you really care deeply for the other person, but you also recognize that, but there are some big holes in, right. in their level of virtue or their character, that as much as you would want to spend a lifetime with them, mm-hmm. or would want to ask them to marry you, or hope that you would be asked to marry them, right. Or him. Right. You recognize that, gosh, from the guy's perspective, I love this, from your perspective, hon. No, I love this guy, but we've been dating for 3 years and the guy hasn't been able to hold on a job for more than 3 months or 4 months. I mean, mm-hmm. I love the guy. He's funny and he's good looking and mm-hmm. we get along well, but is this the kind of guy that's actually going to be able to provide for me and our family as much as I love him? Like, in that invented scenario, yeah, that's probably something that needs to be figured out before you would enter into marriage, because there are red flags already there.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is different than kind of what I was mentioning about, you know, my son before being in a relatively casual relationship and never really kind of clicking or feeling like he could be fully himself. I mean, you know, I'm sure he had his own, you know, or did or have his own virtue issues in his, you know, in these casual relationships prior to meeting his fiance. But you don't want to not be fully you.
Mm, yeah. Wow. So you have a family of 8 children.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. What has it been like to, grow in virtue boot camp, but just to kind of like over the years work with the differing personalities of your children?
Mm-hmm. So our kids today, our oldest is, she's going toward 27. She's coming up on 27. Call it 27, 25, 23, 21, 18, 16, 13, and 9.
Okay.
Right? So 17-ish year span with the 8 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Our oldest daughter, Katie, was a junior in high school, and her little brother, Will, was born.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then she actually was kind of beautiful. She wanted to be the godmother. Godmother for Will's his baptism, which was really kind of neat. So objectively, that's a little bit kind of where we are with our family and our family size and the age range.
I'm not sure mm-hmm. how quickly you mm-hmm. became pregnant after marrying, but what was that? What did that look like? And what did it look like to manage a house with so many children?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were married a year and a half when Katie was born. And then the first 6 children are all about 2 years apart. Mm-hmm. So, I felt like it happened fairly quickly, although not as quickly as for some families. So that was, I felt kind of a blessing for us that that 2-year span allowed a little bit more recovery for me. Mm-hmm. And I never felt like I had 2 babies at the same time. You know, the next one was kind of, that was natural. So that was easy for us. And
yeah, we were very, we've just been, our marriage, we've been very open to life and the children that God wanted to send our way as he wanted them to be sent our way, if you will. I remember, so an anecdote that I often like to share when we talk about our family origins is we have a close family friend who's a priest from Spain. And he actually recently moved back to Spain. He's probably in his mid to late 80s now. But he lived in the States for many, many, many years. And despite living in the States for many, many years, just had still had this incredibly thick Spanish accent. And I remember meeting with him shortly after we'd gotten married. And we'd been open to having kids out of the gate. And we'd been married for, I don't know, 6-7 months or so. And hadn't gotten pregnant. And then I was thinking about changing, leaving my job, going back to grad school, getting a master's degree. And I remember having lunch with him, and I said, hey, his name was Jim, Father Jim. Hey, Father Jim, here's where Ann and I are. You know, we're hoping to have kids right away. It hasn't worked out. Now I'm thinking about going back to grad school, and that means I won't be working. Ann's going to have to work. I think what we're going to do maybe is I'll go back to grad school. We'll hold off on starting our family for a couple of years. I'll get my grad degree, and then I'll find a job, and then Ann can stay home if we get pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. And I just remember having lunch, and he just sat down his fork and his knife, and he sat up in his chair, and he just looked at me, and he said, oh, Rich, I think that is a bad idea, right? I'll never forget, I think that is a bad idea. And then he said, Rich, you have to risk, right? You have to risk, right? And, wow. You know, and I came home and had this conversation with Ann, and, hey, Ann, this is what Father Jim mentioned. He said, he didn't think this is a good idea for us to just sort of put the back burner on starting a family, wait a couple of years until everything is just right and in place, et cetera. And he said, we should risk and leave things in God's hand. And, you know, in true fashion, wound up quitting my job, I don't know, a couple of weeks later, taking out my grad student loans. And then a week after that, I think we found out Ann was pregnant or something, yes. Something along those lines, right? Yeah, yeah. More or less. But I share that brief anecdote or lengthy anecdote as the case may be to, you know, I mean, sometimes just it, like everything isn't mapped out from the get-go, right? Like to let space for the Holy Spirit to work and to move. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't plan, that you shouldn't think through things, and you shouldn't, you know, measure how many soldiers you have to go into the battle, et cetera. But it's sometimes too, you have to leave space, I think, for life to sometimes happen. And that's okay, right?
And it's beautiful, and they're in many each ways. Such a blessing. Yeah. I remember, I worked the first year after Katie was born, because he was in school. And then once he finished school, I stopped working again, and continuing to welcome kids into our family. There definitely were moments where things felt really chaotic. Mm-hmm. Right. And I always would just kind of remind myself that this is how God designed by nature the human person. Mm-hmm. And so if there were little things that I felt that, oh my gosh, I can't be exactly this, or I can't provide exactly that attention, or I can't, you know, or the baby's crying and I can't get to the baby right away because I need to take care of the toddler who might, you know, run into the street or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, that it will be okay. Like the kids will be okay. I love them. I'm, you know, giving the time to them. And I think sometimes the standards of our culture, in part because people have become more accustomed to having fewer children, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of nervousness about, oh, I'm going to mess up the child, or mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to give them this, or I'm not going to have the attention, or we're not going to have the resources, or they're not going to be in this sport or whatever. When really God gives us what the children need, and gives us the grace to give that to them. And so I leaned into that a lot, I think, as a young mom. And it gave me a lot of peace of mind when I felt like, okay, maybe I can't keep up, you know, maybe I can't do this all just perfect. So we're just super grateful. Mm-hmm. We're super grateful. And even our last one, right? So the first 6 are 2 years apart, and then there's a 3 year gap to the seventh and a 4 year gap to the eighth. So I was in my 40s when our youngest was born, and we had for the first time really kind of our youngest was whatever, a little over three when we found out we were expecting him. And so that was the first time in our married life where we, you know, we were out of diapers, we were out of strollers, we were out of high chairs, we were out of cribs. I mean, she was
yeah.
on to the next phase, and we got pregnant, and I was like,
Here we go again.
Oh, we're doing this again. Right? And it was a little like, took me a little while to say, okay, we're doing this again. And I will say, he is the biggest blessing to our entire family, not just to us two, but to our entire family. I mean, we're so grateful that God has kept this experience going of having younger children in our family. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. So I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Emily, we had an interesting experience or a fun experience the other day. Our fifth child, Lucy, just graduated from high school. And her younger sister, Emily, had put together a sort of Lucy's life in video montage.
That's
something that's different when you have eight kids. You know, we would have done that if we had two kids. We would have been the one making the video montage. And I don't know, by the time Lucy's graduating, and Emily's like, I'm going to do this and make this for Lucy. We're like, great. If you do that, that'd be awesome.
I printed up a couple pictures for her grandpa.
So she makes this video montage that was about an hour and a half long. I said, oh my goodness gracious, this is like a full-length movie. We watched about 45 minutes the other night, and it was so well done. It was done, one, by so much love by her little sister, who went through all the family pictures and videos and put this together for her. But it was neat just to watch the family and this. We watched about 45 minutes and just the span of Lucy's life, our fifth. And, you know, you saw the older brothers and sisters. Then you saw, you know, number six, number seven, number eight come onto the scene. You watch her go from these early years to high school, and now she's off to college. And then, Anne, you had said right after we finished watching, and I was even a bit emotional at some different points. And you just turned to the kids that are still living with us. And you just said, guys, I just want to encourage you to have as many kids as you can. Like, just... because of the joy, it's hard to communicate the joy. And that joy doesn't mean easy, right? Mm-hmm. Joy doesn't mean that there aren't challenges. Joy doesn't mean there aren't sacrifices, that you aren't able to do things. I mean, do we go to European vacations with our children? We don't, right? I mean, I taught high school, you know, in public high school for many years. And you know, so it's not like we're sitting on sort of treasure trove of, you know, all of these resources and to have all our kids involved in all these different things. But the culture that they have with one another has been a gift unto itself. And you said almost a bit of a school of virtue in many ways. Yeah.
Well, and I think too, even in terms of our marriage, certainly parenting brings to the surface conflict, right? In marriage at times, it certainly has for us at times, but the children bind you together. So, I mean, I sometimes have this visual of each child being a thread that ties us closer and closer together. Like, and the more children we've had, the closer we become because our lives are so closely intertwined. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's that's the miracle of marriage, right? Is that you have this little person who has components of each of you, and there's no way to extricate that, you know.
I remember when this is a happy memory now, many years ago, 4 years ago with the whole pandemic, but I was, you know, working in a high school setting, and so I was professionally a little bit PTSD from having to work my way through working in a school environment dealing with COVID. But I bring it up in the family context here because all of our kids came home. Our three college kids came home, and we were all together again for, 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. We felt like we caught lightning in a bottle. And not that we ever would speak of that global experience as a blessing. Right. But to be honest with you, in our case, just the microcosm of the Meyer family, for all of us to come back together, and if you asked our kids, they would all echo similar sentiments. They would say, oh, remember, that was great. And we were all together and we Meyer Family Olympics and different things. But not a lot of families had that experience, right? A lot of families, it was, oh my gosh, I'm going to pull my hair out. I can't, we're on top of each other. We certainly were on top of each other because there were 10 of us in the house all at one time again. But it was, I mean, to your point, hon, it was such a joy, right, to have everybody mm-hmm. back together again, I think is a symbol of a larger unity that we strive to live.
What are some of the ways throughout the years that you two have learned to keep that thread? I know that you mentioned your children are what binds you together, mm-hmm. but also what do you practice in terms of continuing to get to know one another throughout the years? And aside from children helping bring you together, mm-hmm. like what are some of the things that you've learned have been really helpful and fruitful to keep your love for each other alive yeah. over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, you want me to start? You want to start?
I can start.
All right, go for it.
So, yeah, we definitely try to go on dates. We're not as consistent as some other couples that I've heard that do every single week. They do every Friday or Saturday morning coffee or whatever. But I will say going out to dinner together, for me, is one of my favorite things mm-hmm. to do. Because it's just the two of us. We're in a relaxed setting, and I just find that we have the best conversations when we're out together. So that I think is key. And then we've also tried to get away together, mm-hmm. For a night or a weekend, maybe not every single year, but for our anniversary or for other trips. So that also is really important, or has been really important for us, I think, just to kind of have that time, put our relationship in pride of place there at the top. I don't know, Rich, what else?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah, I mean, having markers out there that you're looking yeah. forward to be able to spend time with just the two of you, and I do enjoy going out, having a dinner, or going to dinner and a movie. At least for me. Because I work outside of the home and Anne works in the home, for me, going away is really, really important because it helps for me to disconnect from my professional sphere better than if it's just a dinner, right? So if I'm leaving work and I'm had a lot of happening, or I've had a lot happening the next day or the next week, I don't do the best job as I could. Disconnecting and making an effort to be fully and entirely present mm-hmm. can be a challenge, but being away, being able to just step away, even if it's for an evening or 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And I think the older that our kids have gotten, we've made more of an effort to be away. You know, I mentioned we had a chance, something professionally related, to be in Rome for about 5 days last December, and was able to bring Anne and you know, that doesn't happen every 6 months even. But having some opportunities to just be creative about how we can get away together mm-hmm. is great, because you're not left. It's emphasizing where it all began, mm-hmm. right? It began with married love,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Before we were husband and wife, before we were mother exactly. and father,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and we'll still be husband and wife long after the God willing, right? Long yeah. after the kids have left the home, and mm-hmm. you know, you hear about families who have a number of kids leave, and you're all the focus is on kids, and they go off to high school, they go off to college, and yeah. it's like, oh, hey, I remember you. So,
I will exactly. say in recent years, within the last 2 or 3 years, I feel like we've even been more intentional. We've read a few books on marriage, mm-hmm. listened to some podcasts to kind of help us to reconnect mm-hmm. and grow deeper. And I feel like we're, mm-hmm. our relationship is stronger now mm-hmm. than probably it ever has been. I mean, I think definitely there were years when we were very, very busy with kids and family life. When we were still connecting, we always had a good relationship, but we maybe didn't spend as much time mm-hmm. really talking, getting to know each other, going deeper mm-hmm. with things. And I feel like in recent years, we've been a little bit more intentional. Sometimes even we try to communicate even a little bit more during the week. And sometimes we'll go on a walk after dinner together. We'll pray the rosary. We'll chat for a while. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it might not look, I think for us, it hasn't always looked exactly the same in every season of mm-hmm. our relationship. But it's actually really exciting to know that you can grow closer mm-hmm. as you get older, and things don't just kind of get stale.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just keep getting better.
Because it's always helpful to offer resources. What are the names of those two books? The name is escaping me right now. If Women Only Knew, If Men Only Knew, what is it?
Women Need to Know. Every wife should know.
No, that's not it. Shawn T. Feldman is the author of the book, and her husband, Jeff, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Feldman is the last name.
I'm sure if you find it, we'll put it in there,
or maybe it'll come to me by the time we finish this conversation. Yeah,
So for a quick reference, the books that Rich and Anne are referring to are called For Women Only, For Men Only, and For Couples Only by Shawn T. and Jeff Feldman. So check those out.
But it's an example. This was a couple of companion books that someone recommended to us a few years ago. And I remember reading through those and thinking, wow, it led to some really good conversational fodder for us. Because when you get deeper, but there's always another level, right? There's always another foot deeper that you can go in the pond. And even with, I was talking with our son, who's, like I mentioned earlier, is about to get married, and we were chatting about his, hey, excited, and oh, Dad, no, I love her, and I love her, and I'm thinking in my head, and I told him as much. I'm like, gosh, Rich, you know what? You love her, but I'm telling you, you think you love her right now, but 25 years from now, the depth of your love is going to be something completely and totally different than what you perceive it to be today. And that doesn't diminish or suggest that he's not deeply in love today.
An expansion of the heart.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. It's not a zero sum game. It's just will continue to grow and grow and grow. And you're deeply in love day one, but you have all these common experiences, like you had said, hon, with the kids and family life and marriage life. And you wake up 25 years later or 28 years later in our case, and you say, wow, I thought I loved you when we got married, but this is a whole different level that we're at now,
which
is really neat. It's beautiful. Yeah. So one of my final questions, just to tap a little bit into education, because of the rising cost of education, I think that many parents who want to be intentional with how they educate their kids, not everyone can afford to live in beautiful California or some of these states that have really great public schools or private schools or charter schools. What are some of the things that you think are important to look for in what a school has to offer? Should people really be that scared about oh my gosh, where am I going to put my kids? And the school system's going down the drain. We've heard it all. I'm sure you have had, and I'm sure this is you can talk about this for a very long time.
Yeah, this is my life. Do you want me to go first here?
I could go first. It's a really difficult question, right? That each family has to answer for themselves. I think you really have to take into account the couple and the children and their temperaments and their style. I mean, I definitely know families who have sent their kids to public schools their whole career, and the kids turn out beautifully and stronger in their faith maybe than they would have been. Good morals, good values, well-rounded, down-to-earth, great kids. And then the families who put their kids in what seemed like amazing Catholic schools, and then their kids graduate and are, completely lost. So I don't think there's one right or wrong answer. I mean, I can say from our perspective, we definitely have felt that for us and for our children, it was a really big priority for us to put our kids in a school that was aligned with our values. And so we've made a number of sacrifices to make that happen. And we've been pretty happy with that decision. I mean, we felt that it's worth it. And I've even had, when we've been grappling with, is this going to be possible? And how's this going to work? I've even had priests say, it's not the school
that raises the child, it's the family, right. You know? So it is true that the family is the single most important influence on the child. But it sure is nice to have an educational environment that aligns, and supports the family.
I deal with this question a lot at the school where I work, high school. In a positive side, for example, we just had graduation a week and a half or so ago, and families will come up to me afterwards and say, oh, I'm so very grateful, and my son or my daughter, fill in the blank. I don't know what we would have done without the school to help us along the way. And I'm grateful for those comments. Mm-hmm. I'm also very quick sometimes to say, depending how well I know the family, say, hey, at the end of the day, the school as an entity doesn't stand in judgment before anything. But parents will,
right.
And ultimately, families for generations and generations have figured out ways to rear their children in the ways of virtue, and one can't look to a school to do that. You can't abdicate your primary role as educators to a school. To Anne's point, boy, it sure is nice when you have a partner there, but I think sometimes it could be easy to say, well, now that there's this great school nearby, we can drop our kids off and they'll get their faith, or they'll get their virtue and the character, and I can focus on the fun or the whatever as a parent. And I think, and what you said too is certainly right, that I think it would be disingenuous to suggest that there's a certain course of action that's right, you know, writ large across the board for families. You know, there's an economic factor. There's, you know, there's just a practical factor. You may be living in an area that frankly doesn't have great schools. And now what do you do? Mm-hmm. So whether it's homeschooling or public schools or charter schools or faith-based schools or Catholic school or a classical school, Christian school, I mean, there's a lot of different things out there that can make that work. But the school at the end of the day doesn't matter a fraction as much as the family culture. So to families or to young couples or that may be sort of agonizing or losing sleep or having anxiety over how are we going to make this work? We already have two kids and now I'm adding up to tuition at the local X school if it's a private choice and that's X. And where are we going to? Deep breath, right? Mm-hmm. You have the grace of state and you have the ability to use your faculties and use a whole lot of other resources to help you know raise your children in the right ways, even if you can't afford right a private school or a faith-based school. And I will speak candidly too from a person who runs a private school. I lament probably the number of families that we don't actually have a chance to invite into our school culture because they've self-selected and they've presumed that there's no way that I could make this work. Great schools, if you are truly aligned, right, not just sort of reading a mission statement on a website and pairing it back in an application to the school, but if you're really aligned with a school and their values and what they're seeking to do in the world, you know, I think a lot of schools would be creative in finding ways to bring in great families into those schools independent of economic resources. So maybe that would be my advice too, is to don't self-select. Like put the onus on a school to say, we want to be here. Let me demonstrate how much we're willing to sacrifice, even though it's short of what the tuition is. Can you help us?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard because you're having an act of humility and it puts yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And people aren't naturally wired to do that, especially in the realm of finances often.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make presumptions about what is it or isn't available to you either because of your or lack of economic resources, right?
Wow. Yeah, a lot to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this evening. One of the things that we do at the end of every interview is we pray the prayer to Mary, Mother of Fairest Love.
Oh, great idea.
Beautiful.
So.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, we had her here in our living room for a little while.
She went on a little bit of a West Coast tour. I don't know if it was a global tour, but at least on the West Coast. So
yeah.
we had the image here for a while. But yeah, happy to do that, Emily. Amazing. Mary, Mother of Fairest Love, you are the mother of Jesus and our mother. Intercede for us with your son, as you did at the wedding of Cana. Pray for us, Fairest Mother, to strengthen and bless our families. Help those called to marriage to find their spouses and teach them to love with a pure and selfless love. Accompany parents in the upbringing and education of their children with unconditional love. Help those who have answered the Father's call to the consecrated life or to apostolic celibacy to be generous and faithful to their vocations. Bring peace, unity, and joy to the homes of families that are broken or burdened. Accompany with the warmth of your presence those who are alone. You are the Mater Pulchrae de Lectionis, the Mother of Beautiful Love. Help us to love as Jesus loves, so we may show each other love full of mercy and forgiveness. May all our love and affections be always faithful, pure, and chaste. Dear Mother, be our refuge in our material and spiritual needs, and intercede especially for all of those who are listening to this podcast, those who are married, those who have been married for many years, those who are expecting marriage. And may we grow in love and come to know true peace and joy now and in the life to come in heaven. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of After Cana. Thank you to Rich and Ann Meyer for having this awesome conversation with us. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review, or visit us at ferristloveshrine.org.